Welcome to the Better Boards podcast series. Thank you for listening. I'm Sabine Demkowski, founder and managing partner of Better Boards. Our mission at Better Boards is to contribute to creating better boards. We do this by providing clients with an evidence-based approach for board evaluations and board development programs. To fulfill our mission, we give a voice to all who care about creating better boards. Every first and third Thursday of the month, I speak with those that are serving on boards about topics that are high on the board's agenda. All the views expressed in our podcast are the views of our podcast partners and not those of Better Boards. In this episode, I'm delighted to talk with Malcolm McKenzie. Malcolm is Managing Director with Alvarez & Marshall and Head of the European Corporate Transformation Services Practice in London. He brings 30 years of experience in advising senior management and boards on improving top-line and bottom-line performance and has completed over 70 cost reduction, transformation, merger and acquisition, and carve-out engagements across corporate and private equity-owned businesses. Malcolm has also served on several boards and worked with chairmen and boards of directors on evaluating and improving board and company performance. He has led a series of research programs into board leadership and has served as a judge on the Non-Executive Director Awards in the UK since their inception. Welcome, Malcolm. Thank you so much, Malcolm, for contributing to the Better Boards podcast series.
My pleasure, Sabina. Looking forward to the discussion.
One of the many things you do, Malcolm, is you serve as a judge on the Non-Executive Director Awards in the UK. What makes a good Non-Executive Director? Can you share with our listeners the criteria applied when judging the awards?
Yes, of course. No, happy to talk about that. And I think the Non-Executive Director Awards is something I helped set up about 13 or 14 years ago now. And I think it's really important to shine the spotlight on great contributions by NEDs, because often they get, you know, they get all the problems when things go wrong, and when things go right, of course, it's always the executives who've delivered it. So I think it's good to recognize that achievement when non-execs do well. When we've got a judging panel, it's quite a large judging panel, must be about 15 people on it, and it ranges from chairman, CEO. We've got the leader of the Trade Unions Congress on it. So from the union side, we got investors on it, we got advisors on it. So it's a good cross section of people. And those individual judges probably prioritize the criteria a little bit differently between them, and that's good. So I'll explain what the main criteria are, and I might emphasize one a little bit more, and Francis Grady from the TUC may emphasize another one a little bit more. But overall, we've got a good track record, actually, of who we've appointed with the awards over the past decade or more. So the four criteria I would look at is, first of all, how have the directors and the NEDs, have they made a significant contribution in their contributions to the board to ensuring the medium-term success of the business? So sort of fundamentally, the role of the board and the directors is to ensure the medium-term success of the business. So have they played a distinctive contribution to that? And that might be in lots of different ways. You know, it might be more financial one, it might be more M&A one, it might be to do with the people dimension and challenges around that. Have they made a distinctive contribution to the performance? Then similarly, we'd look at, have they made a distinctive contribution to the governance and the board governance of the business? You know, this may range from issues like ESG type issues, which is something that we look at pretty carefully these days, diversity of thinking on the board, the role of the board versus the role of the committees and the role of the executives. Is that well laid out? So something around the governance and the relationship between the executives and the non-execs.
And how do you get this information? Do you trust what they tell you, or do you conduct interviews?
So I'll come to that, if I may, in a moment. Let me just give you the other couple of criteria, and then let's turn to that. So the third would be sustainability. Is it just a one-off flash in the pan, or is it something that we can see contributed by the NED multiple times? And whilst we look predominantly at one board that they've been nominated for, we'll also look at past boards or other charities that they may be sitting on. And the final is peer views. How do the peers view them against these criteria? And so to turn to your question, Sabine, on how do we get the views, people are nominated, typically by a CEO. It would be a typical nominee or possibly another board member. We then do written submissions, not from the individual, but from other members of the board. And we would nearly always get a CEO view as well as from other NEDs, because that's pretty important. I always do, and my fellow judges who are looking after the different categories do then interviews with the candidates. And then we have a debate and discussion around this around the judges' board table.
Very insightful.
It's pretty rigorous. It's pretty rigorous and robust, the process, and we're pretty pleased with the track record that we got there.
How long does it take you to go through this process, actually?
Well, nominations start in the autumn and are always publicised in the Sunday Times, and they start late September, typically. Then there's a nomination period. Then there's the which involves the submissions, as I say, from the other board members. Then there's a first round shortlisting. Then there's a second round shortlisting. Then there's the final interviews. And we have a list of five in each category, which goes to the judges panel. And then we rank those five. And the top three are announced at the awards ceremony, which normally takes place shortly before Easter, sometime around now. We had it got caught up with COVID this year, so it was all announced in the Sunday Times a couple of weeks ago, in fact, the award winners. And we managed to squeeze in a quiet dinner just before the award winners, which was nice, just before all the shutters came down.
You mentioned COVID-19, of course, very tumultuous times. What do you think, what skills and personal traits help non-executive directors in these times to really add value to the boards?
So I'd pick out three here, Sabine. The first would be to be able to see the wood from the trees, what's really happening. Lots of executives and non-executives can panic a bit, can think about their own liability positions, which is only natural at that stage. But to see the wood from the trees is really happening to their business, and different businesses and different sectors, as we all know, are being impacted in very, very different ways. So that'd be the first. The second is for the non-execs to really challenge in a tough and constructive way the executives to really think things through and think harder. The tendency always is for the executives to underestimate what's likely to happen. And certainly I've seen this in various clients over the past months that I've been working with. And the board has got a critical role to really ensure that the execs are thinking this through, and irrespective of the implications, are recognizing the depth of how things may adjust. And of course, this is not only all negative. I've got one client, which is in the technology sector, which is doing really well at the moment, record months they're having. And that is because they're a typical digital player attacking on a digital front some big incumbents in money transmission, payment systems, and the digital stuff are winning because people want to do everything from home now. So, it might be that businesses are underestimating the opportunity, in minority of cases, but that would be a good one, as well as underestimating the severity in their situation. So first was the wood from the trees. The second is the non-execs really to challenge and get the execs to really think harder and at the board level to think it through carefully. And then the third, which is probably the most difficult, is the board's role obviously is classically, or the non-execs role is classically to challenge, to advise, to counsel. But there does come a time in some situations, minority of situations, where they need to step in rather more, because for whatever reason, the execs are out of their depth, or just haven't got the experience, and there needs to be a somewhat more directional approach, to be frank, which you classically see in crises with incumbents going through crises with boards. And that's a very finely judgment that has to be made by the board as to when they're going to take a more proactive, more directive role on with the execs rather than the normal role of, the execs run the company and the chairman runs the board.
When we started to discuss your participation in this podcast, you had to postpone the recording, as many of your clients really felt emotionally struck. You talked about they were in a crisis. How can and how should boards be really responding at this time when it's very uncertain how this crisis really will turn out and where we really are in 4 weeks' time?
Yes, 4 weeks and 8 weeks and 12 weeks as well. So I think what the board needs to be doing is assuring that the company is following four things. The first is the strong leadership of the company. So is the CEO, the CFO, the COO, the divisional leaders, are they rising to the challenge and providing strong leadership? There's nothing worse in a crisis than to look up at the bridge on the boat that's being by the hurricanes or whatever and see nobody on the bridge or nobody vocally on the bridge and clearly in control. So are they displaying visible leadership? And obviously that leadership, what they're communicating will vary as you go through, but are they clearly up there on the bridge? The second thing I would look for as a board is the business, and I'm assuming it's a business that's being struck in some negative way by the COVID crisis. Is it pivoting its focus to two things? Firstly, the welfare of the people in the business. Obviously, you've got to look after the employees. You look after them in very different ways, and there may be some tough decisions that need to be made on furloughing and so on. But is it thinking of the welfare of the employees, which, you know, and back to my ship in a hurricane sort of analogy, if the sailors think that the captain isn't thinking of how he's going to get the whole group through this, the whole muster through this, not just one or two officers, then they'll lose confidence. And the second thing is the business pivoting to cash? I make this as really important, assuming you're being badly hit by this. The whole issue here is a crisis of demand for many sectors, and cash becomes absolutely crucial. So is the business pivoting to cash? And maybe we'll talk a bit more about that in a moment. The third is there a clear that our sailing ship perhaps being buffeted by the hurricanes? We can see the captain up there, but is it clear that he's got his bridge complement of his first lieutenant and that sort of cabinet, that war cabinet, or his close group of people who are going to guide through this? And are they also being fed? Is there a nerve center down in the middle of the ship somewhere which is feeding through the right data from the various instrumentation or whatever, which is feeding up to them? So is it both a war cabinet and a nerve center, if you like? Mm-hmm. And they're slightly different things. And then the fourth situation is, you know, and I go back to the marine analogy again, is are they sending out the distress signals if they need help? You know, they're not doing what the Titanic is. They're just transmitting rubbish from the first class passengers on the telegram. Are they sending out the right signals to the neighbouring shipping? And here the analogy probably would be, are they drawing, are they aware of the various support schemes which are available in different countries, what the implications of those support schemes are, how they can potentially help? So those are the four things I think I'd look for, the board should be looking for, is the leadership, the pivot to cash, the nerve center, which is there at the two levels I talked about, and then the seeking the support. And then coming back to the board members themselves, they've obviously got some fiduciary duties about the solvency and the liquidity of the business that they've got to keep close to, and ensuring that the executives leading the business are doing those four things that I've underlined.
And I expect that we will see a curve we will all have to go through, and priorities of boards will have to shift fast according to where we are in these curves. Do you dare to make any predictions what board members will face when we all start to get through the immediate threat of the virus and life returns to the streets?
Well, I think the secret of success here is actually thinking a move or two ahead. So I can think of two clients I'm working with at the moment, both significantly impacted or substantially impacted. One is really concentrating on the here and now, is doing the pivot to cash type stuff that we were talking about, but is not sufficiently thinking those next couple of moves ahead. And the danger is they cut things which actually will be important for them in 2021. And so are not thinking their way through this, the move or two ahead clearly enough. The other is launched a project, and the name says it all, actually, that we're helping them with, but it's called Project Sunrise. And I think the name says it. They're thinking of the sunrise in 2021 and how they want to be positioned in 2021. And so they are thinking several moves ahead, as well as attending to the here and now and the cash and the staff issues and so on that we're talking about. So it's like as you go through that, you know, well-known cycle now from the unknown unknowns to the known unknowns to the known knowns sort of type of thing, you've got to be thinking that stage ahead and not just get stuck on the phase you are. That's what the art of leadership, I mean, it's back to my marine analogy. You've got to survive the current hurricane, but you've also got to figure out where you're going to end up and do what you can as you navigate the hurricane so that you don't end up on the rocks, but you're ending up in a benign environment or a good environment to prosper as we come through that. So that's the sort of bit of the picture that I have in my mind about that curve.
No, I have to confess, I really love, of course, Project Sunrise. Because I see also far too many people currently being stuck in this immediate threat and almost being frozen and not knowing what to do.
If I can come on to another thing around that is in a crisis, and you know, we at A&M, as I'm sure you know, our heritage is 35 years in very tough restructuring situations and financially challenged situations. And what a lot of businesses have come, you know, where you've got executives who maybe haven't been in such sort of life-threatening situations, don't appreciate is you still have to invest in those situations. You know, when we were doing the financial restructuring of a big infrastructure business, European infrastructure business a few years back, the business had no cash, but it did potentially have a good annuity stream from the infrastructure that it owned. It's just its cost base was higher than the annuity stream. So that obviously had to be sorted. And what we had to do was we had to borrow. We had no cash. We had to borrow. It's very expensive money that we had to borrow from alternative lenders. But it was the right thing for the business to borrow so as to invest that cash in restructuring the cost base to get it so the cost base was lower than the annuity revenue stream rather than higher than it. And we had to convince the creditors committee and also obviously the various stakeholders, including the shareholders. And there was a big one or two big shareholders involved. So it's not that you stop all investment and a restructuring program is an investment. It's an investment to restructure the business. But you need to look very closely and prioritize on your return on cash. And if you get a good, like in that case, the return on cash was something like 6 months or whatever, and it created an insolvent, it would move a business that would have ended up as being insolvent into a solvent business with a multiple on it. And so it's in the best interest of both the creditors and of the shareholders to borrow expensive money so as to progress the restructuring program quickly and get that return, which created value, and the business could then be, and that value is then realized in various ways. And I think a lot of people who haven't been through these sort of hurricanes don't appreciate, they just sort of batten down the hatches, but don't realize you've actually also got to navigate your way through at the same time.
Absolutely. And I mean, of course, this brings me closer to home, talking about board evaluations. There could also be easily a tendency to say, well, it's at the moment not the right time. But what do you think can or could, should board evaluations play? Which role can they play in the current situation?
So board evaluations, you know, are both rearview mirror stuff, looking back at how a board has done, and is also hopefully looking forward as to what's the coaching and support that you can provide, you know, through the learning points of the evaluation to the board in moving forward. And I think here I'd characterize it into two. If you're in the middle of a board evaluation at the moment, you're obviously looking back maybe the financial year that ended in March, you know, most of that year was a, or possibly one that ended in the calendar year at the end of 19, was a, for many businesses, quite a good environment, as was evidenced by, you know, stock prices movements and so on. And I think that evaluation has got to also look forward and call out the discontinuity that's happened, that the way the board functioned through 2019 and the way it needs to function through 2020 are potentially very different for all the reasons that we've talked about. The boards need to get much more closely involved. The cadence, the pace of things need to pick up. There need to be tough judgments made. You do quite often, or you quite, yeah, much more frequently get the view, are we backing the management or are we concerned that they're sort of struggling rather too much? the longer expertise that a board members and non-execs classically have comes more to the fore. So in that evaluation, I think it's got to call that out if it's an evaluation that's being done now. If it's an evaluation that's going to be done, you know, at the end of 2020, then clearly it's going to be looking at how the board members have progressed through these tumultuous seas. And there it will be assessing much more some of the points we were picking out earlier. Have the execs really changed their direction on the business to take account of the unknown unknowns and the known unknowns that provided the leadership that we were talking about earlier? So, and also then to recognize that hopefully 2021, whilst I'm sure 21 will be tough, it will hopefully be more of a recovery year. And so again, the skills required are different. So I think this whole thing of pivoting and pivoting to the situation in hand will be something the board evaluations need to pay much more attention to than when you've got a more gradual and benign environment.
So what would you say if someone says, oh, at the moment we are too busy for a board evaluation, it's not necessary in times like this? Would you agree with this?
Well, I think my challenge there, if it's too busy, then that sounds like you're very concerned about your management and you should be stepping in, because it should be the management that's working through leading the company through this. And of course, the board will need to be, as we're saying, thinking about liquidity and solvency and all the issues we've been talking about. You know, and possibly this month isn't the best of month, but we're going to move quite quickly, I think, through the unknown unknowns to the known unknowns. And I think we're just at that cusp at the moment in Europe. And so in a couple of months' time, I think it'll be much clearer how this is playing out. That doesn't mean there won't be risks of a, you know, second round of infections and so on. But one should be in a situation which is more understood. And also the whole COVID-19 will be more understood in terms of as better data comes through. So I think a board that's trying to delay too long on this is probably not a very wise thing to do, unless it really is a complete and utter crisis and they're taking on a lot of water.
You mentioned that you expect activist activity to pick up again once the crisis begins to come down. What do you expect the focus of activists to be when this happens, when life returns to the streets? What do you think will activists really focus on in the new normal?
So I think this actually links very closely to the board evaluation question as to how the board directs the company through this global crisis. Activists look for undervaluation. That's what they're looking for in a business that could potentially be great but is only good or has managed badly through the disruption, and they look at how they can step in and recreate that value and then recognize that value. So they're going to be looking for those who are navigating this badly. So businesses that are doing all the things that, not doing all the things that we've been talking about during this podcast. So they will be looking for businesses that have potentially not prepared for 21. They're just focused on the very short term and haven't thought the several moves ahead. They'll be looking for businesses that haven't focused sufficiently on cash and have got into a very bad way and could be picked up very, very cheaply. They'll be looking for businesses where the relationships and the working between the board and the executive has been dysfunctional, which has had an impact, therefore, on the pace and the speed of how they've reacted. It'll be across sectors and it'll be quite opportunistic, I think. Now, there's probably another dimension to bring in here, Sabine, is I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on companies of have they, and it is the ESG sort of angle, have they played their appropriate role as social partners in our society? You know, and we saw one or two businesses that early on clearly made mistakes around how they positioned themselves and whether they were closing or how they were treating staff. Because if they've been seen to have handled that badly, I think that's going to create an impact, quite a significant impact on their valuation. So those are sort of some of the areas that activists are going to be looking at. And I'm sure there'll be lots of opportunities for them. And the real message and takeaway for boards is don't fall into that trap, because that's probably going to be quite a nasty place to be. But take account of all the points we've been talking about to ensure your company is well led through these very difficult times and thinks several moves ahead to ensure it gets there, having transparency on cash and actions to manage their way through this.
Fantastic. Thank you ever so much, Malcolm, for your insights, for your time. And I think there are lots of interesting points for board members to pick up here, which can guide them through these challenging times. Thank you so much, Malcolm.
My pleasure. Pleasure chatting to you, Sabine.
How can we help you and your boards? We at Better Boards are delighted to hear from you. You can best reach us on info@better-boards.com.